Okay guys, let's get started. Welcome to class number 3. I can't believe we're already at the third class. And just to give a little bit of a recap about where we've been, we've spent the first two classes focusing on sort of the really foundational stuff. So we talked about last time we talked about working protected and making sure you really know what you're doing, understanding your subconscious. We talked about that, and we started in the first class with looking at what open channels you already had and establishing kind of a daily practice to help support you. So if you guys aren't on the Facebook group, I really recommend that that you get on the Facebook group, because so much cool, interesting, amazing, fun stuff is happening on the Facebook. Like half the fun of the class is happening on the Facebook class group, just so you know. And the people that are on the Facebook group already know that, can tell you that it's really true. So it's really cool. And if you, are so inclined to jump into the party, get on the Facebook group. And also I just want to remind you guys that part of the class, what you get for the class is an individual session with me. So feel free to go to my website and book something online. If you're far away, then we'll do over the phone or Skype. And if you're local, you can come on in. But you get a session with me as part of the class. And we can use that session any way that you like, really, for talking about what's up for you in class is good, or any particular questions or problems or blocks that you're coming up against, we can work through that in your private session. So don't forget about that. Today we've got a really great topic. We're going to really be talking about spirit guides today, and we've talked about that a bit some already. Last class I had you connect with your protector guide. And in this class I want to focus on your team. So I'm going to talk about what that is and what the team is all about, to help you get a sense of who you're assembling your team. But before we talk about that, I have a little sort of subtopic that I want to talk about, and it, we were sort of an extension of what we were talking about in the last class, which had to do more with the brain, and our subconscious, how to use our subconscious, how to understand our subconscious. I hope that's something that's you've been practicing. We did a lot with dreams in the last class, and I can tell by what's been happening on the Facebook group that the material is starting to really work for you guys, that people are having a lot of breakthroughs and understanding their psychic nature and working at this more advanced level. It's really happening. So here's another really important piece of information that sort of goes along with the brain and understanding your brain category. And there are a couple of different types of brainwave activity, and this isn't psychic. This is really like medical doctor stuff. Like we could hook you up to a put electrodes on your head and hook you up to an EEG and look at your brainwaves, and this is like hard science. So what the scientists know about our brainwave activity is that there's four brainwave states, right? There's the beta state, which is the waking state. So right now, you guys are all in beta, hopefully, wide awake and functioning with the bulk of the energy. Is the energy of the brain is happening in the frontal cortex, and you're wide awake, you're rational, you're logical, then the next state underneath that is called the alpha state. And the alpha state is a slower brainwave state, and it's a very light trance state. When you're in alpha, you can, you drive a car, so a lot of times you'll slip into alpha while you're driving. You can wash your dishes. People go into an alpha state when they're walking. So sort of boring, repetitive action. Mowing the lawn is really great for me, alpha brainwave. Washing dishes, being in the shower, cleaning something, driving. This is a key. I'm going to talk a little bit more about why that's important. Then the lower state than that is called the theta state. When you're in theta, you're really not that conscious. Like you're sleeping, or you're in deep, deep meditation. And there's the delta wave, which is the so deep sleep that you're basically like, for all intents and purposes, unconscious. And they know this because when they've studied sleep behavior, what happens is we go through these sort of cycling through these brainwave states throughout the night. So beta, you're awake. Alpha, you fall asleep. REM, dream state happens like at the low end of alpha and the beginning of theta. And when you go into a theta, brain dreaming activity stops, but it's an incredibly healing place. So the theta wave is the place where most healing, the deepest amount of healing happens. And then delta is the kind of sleep you have where you don't even, you're lights out. Like you don't have any consciousness, you don't remember who you are. And, you know, we can feel ourselves come up out of that state. So when you hit, spend some time in delta and then you come back up through theta and you'll dream again and then you hit alpha and then beta, you wake up again and people will cycle through this, these brainwave states as normally many, many times during one night of sleep. So what, why this is important is that psychics learn, meditators, shamans, yogis, all these people learn how to shift brainwave states at will. And that's one thing that I do as a psychic and have always done as a psychic. When I was a young person, I trained, you know, I think I told you this last time, when I was 10 years old, my parents took me to transcendental meditation and I learned how to meditate when I was 10. And after that, I did this thing called Silva Mind Control when I was probably 12. I think I was in junior high and high school. And Silva Mind Control has, now it's called the Silva Method. Really, really cool. Very, very cool stuff. It was really great training for my mind, for my brain. And what they do in Silva is they teach you how to consciously shift your brainwave state from the beta state into the alpha state and then even into the theta state. And this is what meditators do. So meditation, yogis, all these spiritual practices also teach you how to shift your brainwave state at will. And this is what you have to do. It's Silva, S-I-L-V-A. Jose Silva was the man who invented this. Now you can look it up. It's called Silva Mind Control, or Silva, the Silva Method, I think is what it's called now. And so in order to do psychic work, and particularly in order to do psychic work, like if you want to have a practice and work with people, or catch this, you know, on demand, you have to learn how to shift your brainwave state on demand. And I do, this is what I do when I go into reading. So you guys have all wandered in and out of these brain states by accident. Like, you know how when you're chewing over a problem and you put the problem down and you go mow your lawn, or you go take a shower, or you get in the tub, you do something that shifts you into an alpha state and the solution comes to you. So alpha is where we have the most connection with our guides. And theta is where deep, deep healing happens. So when I'm in a session with somebody, I consciously shift my brain into the alpha, and that's how I make my connection with my guides and why I'm able to do it reliably. And for me, it's really interesting because I'll get into certain points of the reading where I actually have to shift my brain state lower, like really almost into the theta. And I have to do that when I do mediumship work, or when I pull up people's past lives. And when I'm in alpha, I'm holding open my connection to my guides. I'm getting this constant stream of guidance. And later in the class, we're going to talk a lot about how you do sessions with people. But I'm getting this constant feed of information in the back of my head, like we talked about last time. But I'm also doing energy work, and my eyes are open. I'm walking around the table. I'm standing up. I'm doing some Reiki. I'm having a conversation. It's like juggling a lot of different balls. I can do that in theta. I mean, in alpha, but then to access that deeper level of psychic information to do mediumship work or to get a past life, I have to sit down because I have to shift my brainwave into theta, and I can't stand up. And I can't do anything else. So I will get in my chair, sit on my stool, and I'll sit, and I have to sit still, and I drop my brainwave state down into just the high theta state. That's where I retrieve that deeper information. So shamans do this too. Really, psychics and shamans have always learned how to shift state at will. It's really important to learn how to do that. So meditation, all these practices that I'm giving you, are opportunities for you to do that. And now the other thing that's really interesting about this is that when you're dreaming, like say, and I'm sure most of you have had an experience, something like what I'm about to describe. where you're sleeping and you feel a presence in your room and you wake up out of a sleep and you, maybe you see or feel or sense, let's use see for example, you see somebody standing in your room. This happened to me not that long, a couple nights ago. I woke up and I saw somebody standing at the end of my bed, like with my eyes open. I thought it was one of my kids, like in my room, like that's how much I saw it. And then I woke up a little more and that like person disappeared, right? So I knew it wasn't one of my kids. And what happens then is as I was waking up, I was come up out of theta and I went into alpha and my eyes were open, but my brain is still in that alpha state. That's when you can see things with your eyes open. That's when you can perceive, like, you know, whatever sense is open for you. That's when you can really feel what's happening, like it's tangible. And then it's not like, you know, that actually switched the light on and that person disappeared. And it wasn't because I turned the light on that the person disappeared. It was because I shifted into a beta. I had to wake up. I had to wake up more to turn the light on. And then my brain went into the beta, and boom, my vision is gone. My psychic vision is gone. And I knew that person was still there. It was just sort of a passing through ghost, that, you know, spirit of a dead person. And I just kind of went, you know, I don't really want to talk to you right now. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, I'm going back to bed. If you still want to talk to me in the morning, like my office hours are from 10 to 4. Like I'll talk to you then, you know? But I'm sure people have had that experience or you all know what I'm talking about on some level where you shift your brain state and boom, you're having a psychic thing. But we need to learn how to do it when we want to do it on demand because that's what it's all about. That's when the information gets reliable. And it's really just a matter of practice. So meditation practice is really powerful at shifting your brain state. And then what happens is you begin to learn what it feels like to be in that alpha state. You feel sort of loose, relaxed. It's like, also if you do art, by the way, you're in an alpha state. Because you can't do art when you're in beta. Art all comes up, creativity, you know, super, alpha is super creative. And it's very good at solving problems, seeing things creatively, having creative ideas, having artistic ideas, all those things come through that alpha place. And learning how to get there on your own, the meditations that I'm having you do and the practices that I'm having you do will begin to foster your ability to switch. One of the things that I'm going to teach you right now is something that I learned from Silva Mind Control ages and ages ago. So from now on, when you meditate, it's called the three-finger technique. So three fingers. It means you put your three fingers together, you know, your thumb, your index finger, and your middle finger together like this. And when you meditate, so sit almost in lotus position with your fingers together like this. It's a mudra. And what happens is your brain begins to associate this position with alpha. So you only do this when you're meditating. And then you can bring about that state by doing this. So I learned that in all the hours that I logged doing Silva Mind Control, which was a ton when I was younger, they would have us hold our fingers together when we meditate. It puts you, drops you down as that, I mean, it. When you're in alpha, your brain associates three fingers with alpha. Then when you need to get there fast, all you have to do is this. All you have to do, it's like kind of neuro-linguistic programming technique called it's like a trigger, you know. So this movement then triggers your brain wave state. So from now on, you can pick a different trigger. You can pick a different, if something else, you know, works for you better, then do that. But this is, the three-finger technique is very discreet, you know, and I notice old habits die hard, so a couple weeks ago, I was having dental work done. I had a crown put in. Ouch. And I'm sitting there in the chair, dentist chair, like being miserable. And I did my three-finger technique, and all of a sudden, I went to my happy place. You know, so I'm just sort of checked out in happy meditation land, and they're doing what they do. And I was like, oh, wow, you know, that was like over 30 years ago. I learned that technique, and I'm still doing it. So I want you to pick some kind of finger thing you can do. I like the three-finger technique, and do it that way. So, alpha state. And just begin to pay attention to your brain state. Begin to pay attention to when you go into alpha, what you do that helps you go into alpha. Yoga, Tai Chi, all of these things, meditation, Reiki, all cultivates that alpha state. Creative endeavors, all those things. So, That's really important. And we're going to continue to come back to this topic over and over again because it's just that important. So any questions about alpha state or theta state before we move on to guides? So James wants to know, do muses come from the alpha? Yes. So muses are kinds of guides that have to do with our creative, you know, artists and poets say they have a muse, you know, that comes in and inspires them. So yes, all artistic inspiration comes from an alpha state. Totally. And Jennifer, thank you for posting the URL for the Silva Method. It's www.silvamethod.com. Check it out. Super cool stuff. You guys are already getting a lot, so I don't know if you need to run that as well as this, but if you're interested in that kind of training, you can't go wrong with it. Wait till this class is done and then do it, because doing both might be a bit much. But it's really, really good tech, so. Alright, so unless there's other questions about alpha, we're going to talk about guides. So as I said, we all have this team of guides. I have 13 guides that work with me my whole life. They've always just called themselves them. In my head, it's they say them, you know. And it's them with a capital T-H, you know, a capital. And there's 13 of them. So they've been in my head since I was born, and that's pretty strange, but that's just how it is for me. So you will be different for you. Everyone has a cast of characters that are their spirit guides. You all have a team. Nobody ever just has one, right? We all have a group. And that what I want you to begin to do is figure out who your team is and who your group is, particularly the group that's working with you right now. So some of your guides stay with your whole life and may even appear in many or all of your lifetimes. There's one particular guide that we're going to focus on today called your spiritual director, and your spiritual director has been your spirit guide forever, on all of your lives. Other guides come and go as we need them, so they can be sort of task-specific, like you're working on or a stage of your life. So I had, like, a guy, I remember a very particular guide that was with me really only when I was going through early motherhood, so pregnancy and little tiny kid baby stage, and that guide's function was more around that. That was their specialty. Some guides are universal guides and are available to anybody. For example, Jesus and Mary. Like, you know, anyone can invoke those guides, can call to them. You pray to Jesus and Mary. You do some Hail Marys and Our Fathers. You get Jesus and Mary. They're not just about you. They're global. They're universal guides. And some guides are really completely unique to you and won't have any associations with anybody else. And some guides are specialists and they work on something very particular. Other guides are generalists. And again, it sort of depends on, you know, which guide. So how they help us, it's like a lot of times they have a very particular role that they fill for us. So, for example, teacher guides. Teacher guides are around you and they are, you know, a specialist in a particular subject. So if you're studying something, if you're studying Reiki or you're studying in the full spectrum energy medicine school or you're studying, you know, anything, you're in school, you will pull in guides whose job it is to help teach you that subject and that particular subject, that's their specialty. I often find teacher guides to be very helpful when you're working on things like learning your psychic development, or, you know, James, who just threw himself into studying the tarot, might have pulled a particular guide to help with that topic. So we have, you know, specialists in the teacher guides that are specialists, and their role is like any teacher is to help you learn something. You might have a guide that's more event or project specific. So if you're working on a project or for a period of time in your life, like I talked about, you're writing your dissertation, or you're going through something that's, you know, a big part of your personal growth or something like that. You might pull a guide that's just specific around that kind of thing. And James already talked about this, the muses. So muses are particular kinds of guides that are connected to our creativity. I know we have some really artistic people in this class. So a muse might come around to help you feel inspired to write or paint or create music. And a lot of times when you talk to artists that have muse guides, they'll tell you they feel like they're channeling, you know, like that happens to me often when I'm writing. I get sort of a bee in my bonnet about it, and I can't settle until I sit down and finish the creative project. It's usually, for me, it's always writing. So, but a muse can be around in any kind of artistic endeavor. You can have a guide that whose job it is to inspire you and for you to create something in the world around that inspiration. We also have guides that are like emotional guides or counselors. So they're deeply connected to our emotional selves and will help process feelings and emotions that come up for you when you're dealing with big emotional events in your life. Loss or grief or separation or trauma, you know, if you're working with that, they will offer comfort and companionship to you while you're chewing over the big emotional things. We talked about the spiritual director. So your spiritual director is the particular guide whose job it is. This is a really interesting guide, and this is the one that I want to focus on today. But your spiritual director's job is to create your spiritual direction. So I will tell you, this is an important guide for you right now, and that's why we want to concentrate on this guide. This guide, it's a funny kind of guide. Everyone's got one. And it's not a guide that's maybe like in your face every day, you know, that's really present to you every single minute of the day. Like maybe an emotional guide might be or a counselor guide might be if you're having a hard time. You may feel the presence of that guide really a lot. The spiritual director comes in when big changes are happening, when big shifts, big transformations, like the landscape of your life is getting rearranged. The spiritual director will show up to show you your new path. And a lot of times when I see them, they're in my symbol library. We talked about the symbol library last class, right? In my symbol library, they often come holding a lantern, which is literally about lighting the path in front of you, right? And there's a tarot card called the Hermit that has this old man holding a lantern standing on the top of a mountain. And this is a great example of what a spiritual director might look like. Sometimes I also see them holding a book or a scroll or some kind of paper, you know, something like that, that has like the story of your life written into it, like your contracts and your mission. So this is the one you want to appeal to if you feel lost, if you need direction, if you need help understanding where to go next. And your spiritual director will always, always, always show you what to do next if you ask. The thing is, a lot of times we ask and then we don't want to do what they say, right? You know, you feel all messed up and you ask your spiritual director what to do and they say something like, quit your job and move to California. And you're like, what? I'm not doing that. You know, your spiritual director's like, that's what you gotta do, you know? And usually they'll find creative ways to get you there. So if you don't quit your job and you don't quit your job and you don't quit your job and you don't quit your job, one day you come into your job and your boss fires you. And you think it's this great tragedy. Oh my God, I got fired. And your spiritual director's like, Lordy, have you any idea how hard it was for me to get you? You were like dug into that job like a tick on a dog, you know, like how hard was it for your guide to get you out of that position? And you can tell when these guides are around. These guides, usually in my experience with people, I mean, everyone's got a different, you know, experience with these guides, but I find that they are prone to working with you in the real world. So it's not that you won't hear from them, like, you know, you won't be having a conversation with them, but they usually show their hand by what happens in your life. Doors close. Other doors open. Pathways materialize out of nowhere. People call you out of the blue and say, yeah, I gotta, you know, you should meet this person, or, you know, and somebody invites you to a party and you meet your future spouse, or you just got fired and you think it's a disaster, and then 5 minutes later, somebody introduces you to somebody else. Like, it's the kind of like we experience those moments in life as sort of this magical flow, you know, like when you're in the zone and there's a magical quality to your life when it's flowing in a way, you know, kind of lots of synchronicity, lots of chance, you know, kismet kind of experiences, is often a real signature of how the spiritual directors work. So the thing that's interesting and cool about these guys, I find them really reassuring. It's really reassuring to understand who your spiritual director is, because even when you don't know what you're doing and where you're going, your spiritual director will always, and I mean this seriously, always show you what the next step is. Sometimes you won't see like 5 miles down the road, but you'll always see what you gotta do next. And usually they make sure that you have the wherewithal to do, you have to bring your own courage, you know, and your own fortitude and your own ability to take risks. You have to bring that yourself, but they always give you the tools or the people or the luck or the opening. They create the opportunity. You have to take the opportunity. And that's how it goes. And I think a lot of times people who get into like really, tough spots in their life, it's because they didn't take the opportunity, and so their spiritual director arranges a situation where they've got no choice. So sometimes it's the boss that fires you, or the husband that leaves you, or, you know, oh my God, what a great tragedy that, you know, that husband left me. You know, really your guide is like facepalm, you know, it's like, oh my God, that was the only way you were going to get out of that, is if it happened to you, because for whatever reason you didn't have the courage or the strength or the wherewithal to pull the trigger yourself. If you don't, your guides will do it for you, just sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. So, spiritual directors, we're gonna focus on that one a little bit later too. So we talked last time about guardians and protectors, because we always have guardian and protector guides. We did last time a meditation to help you connect with your protector guide. So another kind of guide you're gonna, especially if you're have mediumship qualities, or you think you may want to be doing some mediumship work, are what I call the gatekeeper guides. Gatekeeper guides stand at the crossroads. Sometimes you actually see them in the crossroad. And we're gonna work with these guides in the class that we do on mediumship, later in the program. They stand between the realms, and they will make the connections for you across, like, you want to talk to dead people, you gotta go through the gate. You gotta have a gateway, gatekeeper guide or gateway guide that opens the gate to that realm, the world, the land of the dead, you know, or heaven, whatever, wherever you're going, gets that person and brings them through to you. Also your gatekeeper guide will make sure that you learn how to close the gate behind you, because it's very dangerous and bad news to do that kind of work and leave those gateways open. So I worked with a woman years and years ago who was a medium, and she was pretty much self-taught. You know, she didn't have a teacher. She had a lot of raw potential. Like, she had the chops, but she didn't have any formal training. So she could never figure out. Her office was in her home, so she would see mediumship clients in her house. And she could never figure out why her house was crowded with spirits. It was so bad that, like, her kids didn't want to live there. Nobody would visit her. It was really funky and gross feeling in her house. And she asked me to come and do a house clearing, and I was like, well, do you ever close the gate behind you when you're done with a reading? And she's like, what are you talking about? What gate? What do you mean? You know? And she didn't, because she didn't have formal training, she never knew that if you open that gate, you have to close it. Because otherwise, you got an open gate to this land of the dead in your living room, and what's gonna happen, right? So, important safety tip, close the gates, close the doors, do not open doors to different, that's why no Ouija boards, not even having them in their house, can't tell you enough how bad that is, but, you know, it's just really important to close the gates. It's like you wouldn't leave your house wide open, you don't leave your, those ones either. So, there are particular guides that are, gatekeeper guides. And the last kind of guides that, we sort of talked about this a little bit, but I think of them as working guides, and working guides are, will often be assisting you in whatever work you do. So, you know, if you're a doctor, or you're a lawyer, or you're whatever, you're a carpenter, whatever you are, and you're working, you may have guides, depending on what you do, you may have guides that are sort of assisting your life's work, your life purpose, your life's work. So, in my case, since I work as a healer and a psychic, my guides, and we all have this type of guide, we all have healer guides that work with us, especially if you're a healer, you will have these guides. But even if you're not a healer, you will have healer guides, and they're sort of the emotional guides we talked about are sort of a variation of this guide. The healers often work with us when we're sick. They work on our energy fields. A lot of times they work on us when we're sleeping. People who are really shut down to their inner guidance, often the only time contact they ever get with their guides are when they're sleeping. So you get, you know, Joe Bag of Donuts, who doesn't want to talk to his guides and doesn't listen to his guidance. He falls asleep, and his guides all sort of rush in, and healer guides are like, you know, working him over while he's asleep, and the spiritual director is trying to get him to, you know, focus on his path and, you know, whatever's going on. And then we wake up, and we don't see them, but they're still around even though we don't see them. But healer guides will work with you on whatever level of healing that you need. And if you're a healer, they will also assist you in your sessions. So those are the functions of the guides, and within that, there's some ground rules. So I just want to talk a little bit about the ground rules. Your guides cannot and will not interfere with your free will or take away your lessons or an experience that you need to have for your growth or evolution. So sometimes I hear people petition their guides, you know, save me and rescue me, and they can't do that. So they can't interfere with your free will, and they also can't interfere with you experiencing the results of your free will choices. So maybe you choose something and you don't like the outcome. That's how we learn down here on Earth. Your guides are not going to take away your karma. They're not going to, you know, what would be the point? Their point is to, like, get us over those hurdles, not take away our growth opportunities. So you need to be realistic about what you're asking your guides to do. They're not going to solve all your problems for you. They will cheerlead for you. They will help you. They will throw you hints. They will throw some magic, you know, your way. But they're not going to take away your lesson. That's what would be the point of that. The ground rule is that we need, because we live in a free will dimension here, we need, to use our free will to ask our guides for help, guidance, and assistance. So they're like waiting on the sideline for you to ask, and they're not going to, generally speaking, get in there unless you ask. They need, because of, you know, they need our permission to work with them. So ask frequently if you want help, and then be open to the kind of help they give you, because it's not a rescue kind of help. It's more like a clue or a hint or support or comfort or something like that. The other thing is that your guides also will never interfere with another person's free will. That's not good. That's called black magic, so we don't do that, and our guides don't do that either. It's not cool to interfere with somebody else's free will. And our guides more or less sort of abide by the rules and regulations of our dimension. On occasion, they'll throw out a miracle. Miracles happen all the time. They really do. And when you really need a miracle, you might get one. And at the same time, you know, your guides sort of have to operate under the, you know, the basic laws of physics of our particular planet. So, so both of those things are true. Some people have, so you're going to ask yourself, are your guides hands on or hands off? Some people have a really, really tight connection to their guides and feel them every minute. I'm like that. My guides are very much, in contact with me all the time. Almost never do I not feel them. And also they're a bit bossy, I have to say. My guides are really bossy, and tell me what to do. And mostly my whole entire life it's been that way. And I just show up and do what I'm told. Seriously, like that's how I experience my guides. And that's okay for me. Like I understand that's part of my deal. So I have bossy guides. Other people's guides are not bossy at all. They're very hands-off guides. And there are people that hate being controlled, hate being bossed around, hate being told what to do, have a strong commitment to learning things on their own. And if you're a person like that, your guides will be more hands-off. And this will be it's a constitutional issue for you. So if you will know right away which camp you're in, and you may have sort of in the middle too. You may be like, well, sometimes they're in my face, and other times I feel like I'm on my own. But there's definitely people who really only learn by having things happen, by going through it themselves, and they tend to have like, I want to figure it out myself, don't tell me what to do. They have hands-off guides. They'll give you a hint if you ask, but they're not in your face. Me, on the other hand, I show up and do what I'm told. That's how it goes. So inside of this, I talked about a lot of the functions of guides. Inside of this, the guides, as far as I can tell, there's really an infinite number, different types of guides. So we have human guides, we have non-human guides. You can sort of break them into human and non-human guides. And I also just want to make a little bit of a distinction here, where I use the term guide as an umbrella term to mean benevolent, non-physical energy beings whose job it is to support our evolution. Okay, that's a big umbrella. And inside of that, there's all different types of these guides. And then the word entity is generally meant to be a non-helpful, non-physical being. And an entity can be a human entity like a ghost, or it can be a non-human entity. And there's lots of those ones that we're not going to necessarily talk about them today, although we will later on in detail. So entities, bad. Guides, good. And again, guides, just a sort of a basic umbrella term for non-physical beings, right? So one of the things that people say when I talk about guides is they say, do you mean my angel? Yeah, angels are a type of guides. And I have, an interesting relationship with angels. I'm just going to go really briefly here through a little bit of the types of guides so you can have sort of a general sense. Some of you know this stuff already, but so just bear with me through this part. But some of you don't, so that's why I'm talking about it. Now, angels are non-human guides. It's not like we die and become an angel. That's not how it works. They're a different sort of species in a way. They've never been human, and they never will. And they're the Elohim, is another word for them. It's sort of the old Kabbalistic term for angels. Means servants of God, servants of the God El, the Elohim. And they are, in a way, like a servant race. They serve God. They don't have much. They're immortal. They don't have much free will. They have barely any free will. And most angels have nothing whatsoever to do with humanity. They're off doing running other planets and doing other things. When I was little, the angels always called themselves the singers. And I experienced them as very beings of great vibration. So they sing. They sing in like a noise that to me sounds like 64-part Gregorian chant harmonics. And they always called the God the creator, the conductor, the composer, you know. And they called the, in my childhood, they called the universe the symphony. So they sing the notes of the symphony. I think that's so cool, right? You know, that they see everything as vibration. So the universe is the symphony and they sing the notes of the symphony. So there's a very, very, very small percentage of these beings that have anything to do with humanity. They sort of guard over our planet and foster the evolution of humanity. Never ever do they look like people to me. Sometimes they seem like people, but our guides will often put on a user interface that we can accept. Because we don't want to see a guide and freak out at its form. They'll put on a user interface so we feel comfortable. So I'm pretty sure that when people see angels as humans, like the human with the wings and the halo, that's more of the user interface. To me, they always look like columns of light. Very, very, very tall. Like just coming down from the heaven, like in a big column. Or sometimes I'll see them as wheels of light, of big, funny, sort of strangely geometric patterns. Huge. And they're huge. Angels are huge. And when I was little, they scared the crap out of me. I never could quite understand the angel card, you know, people who are like, oh, I'm going to play with my angel. They scared the crap out of me when I was little because they're huge, they're enormous, and they're freaking intense. This is just my perspective. I know other people have my experience. Other people have different experience with angels, but I'm still a little afraid of them. When they come, I'm always like, oh, my God. First of all, they're so loud, and they're so intense, and they have so much energy. I'm like, whoa, like, what do you, you know, what's going on here? I would really love for you to not see them as pets, like puppies. You know, they're not like that. They've got huge power, huge energy, and can do amazing things. Some angels are really talkative and communicative. I find for the most part they're not so much. They're more, they communicate with us. It's through feelings. So they'll be around you to comfort you or to cozy up with you or to love you, you know, love you. Again, my experience with angels is they're not particularly good at time, and they're immortal beings that have never had a human life. So if you ask them, like, when, question, well, when is that going to happen? They'll say soon. And soon for an angel, it would be like 5 lifetimes from now because, what do they know? They're immortal beings. They've never had a human life. And they're not always so understanding of human suffering, like, because they don't quite suffer the way we do. So they'll, if something bad happens in your life, they'll be like, isn't that great? Look at everything you're learning, you know, like, isn't that amazing? It's so, which it is, you know. It is amazing. So, but they don't have the human experience. It's just not something they can 100% relate to having never really been human. I do not believe that angels manifest here. It hurts them to drop their dimension so much that they can actually materialize. They will do it to save your life if it's not your time to die. You know, those stories of like, the man pulled me out of the car, a burning car, and I would have died, and then he wasn't there. Sometimes that's your angel. And often they act through other people more frequently. So it's much easier for them rather than materialize here, which is really dicey for them. They will get somebody who's angel friendly to show up and pull you out of the car. That's something that I really see actually happen, much more frequently. So there are some of you that will be angel people. And if you're an angel person, God bless you. There are others of you, I'm not particularly an angel person. I mean, I have an angel that works with me and I love seeing them on other people, but it's not really my thing. But it might be your thing. So if it is, when we do more work, I want you to see if you are a person that really draws in angels around you. Some of the other guides that we might work with are like our ancestors. Again, I'm not particularly connected to my ancestors, but some of you are, have a really strong connection to an ancestor's guide. Ancestor guides are your loved ones, people that you've known that have already crossed over. And help from the other side. So it could be your grandmother that passed away or your Uncle Fred or someone in your great-grandmother that you never met but you still have hanging around you. And often I see people, when they come in for sessions, I'll see a whole line of ancestors standing in a row behind them. Like, and I know that's a person that's really, really connected with their ancestral lineage. And their ancestors, like, and also I think certain cultures, Asian cultures and other, you know, Far Eastern, Near Eastern cultures are much more ancestor-centric than we are. And they stay, they form these bonds with their, they cultivate those ancestor bonds. And sometimes I'll see that in people. And they, it's an interesting thing because when you're working with ancestor guides, because they bring you a lot of gifts. So they'll bring you the, they'll push through the family line, the talents and, you know, positive things, but they often also bring with them the family wound, you know, the family demon. And as you clear, when you're working with ancestors, as you clear, stuff in you, you'll often clear your entire lineage. So I often see people that have, like, bad shit has happened in their family lineage. Like, I worked with a family, this is crazy, but totally true. I worked with a family where in every generation for the past 5 generations, there, a man killed his wife. So murder. Or I've seen suicide. First son and, you know, the firstborn son was committed suicide in every generation for 7 generations. Right? What is that stuff? That's what I'm talking about, or incest, or exile, or fertility, infertility, adoption, these sort of big, gnarly issues that we deal with, often get passed through our ancestral lineage, and the ancestors carry the wound, and also clear, helpful, when you clear that wound, you sometimes clear for your ancestral line. So sometimes people have this deep connection. If you do, you need to know that. Sometimes you have what I think of as your soul family guides. So these are human guides, like your ancestors are human guides. Soul family guides are, we have a soul family. We have this, you know, group, a pod of souls that we incarnate with over and over again. And it can be anywhere from 10 to 25 people that you've just incarnated with in every way over and over and over again throughout your life. And they may not be incarnate, like you may know them. Right? You may have married one, or you're, you know these people in your life, they're your soulmates. And sometimes they're not in your life in a physical way, but they're around you as a guide. So it's always good to know that. Those are very cool guides to be in touch with and to know. I think most people have at least one guide from their soul family that's hanging around them. So, and they feel more like companions or compatriots, they're like on the same level as us. They're not like a teacher guide or a spiritual director who's coming in to tell you what to do. Like, they're not above you. They're walking alongside of you. We also have, in the human guide family, we have the masters. So I love this particular category of guides, my favorite, and I work a lot with the master. So the masters are human beings that have reached the end of their incarnational cycle, and so they reach enlightenment, and they come back now as a spirit in order to help the rest of humanity evolve. So pretty much everyone has a master-level guide that's working underneath them, and whoever the master-level guide is for you, is probably been your master guide for a long time. You know, they're somebody that's been working with you for forever, you know, through many of your lifetimes. It might be somebody like Jesus or the Buddha or sometimes the saints, you know, there's all different kinds of master level guides. So it's really good to know who yours is if you have one. Hang on, I'm having a little trouble with my video feed. Hang on here. So I think they're really great. I like the master level guide. Personally, this is my opinion. I like them because, they really understand what it's like to be human. They really understand, you know, suffering and time and the ins and outs of the human experience. They're really good at that stuff. So you might have some of those guides. I know a bunch of you guys are gut people or have guides that are, you know, nature spirits. So power animals, right? They're the essences of animals and they're very pure and clean, simple energy. And it's really, if you have them, it's really good to get a lot of reference books around what the different guides mean. So when you see them, you know what they are. But or people who have sort of a nature connection to the natural world, you know, I often see, and there's some of you that are like this, that have power animals and nature spirits. So particularly shamanic work. So shamans work with the spirits of the natural world, plant spirit medicine, so the spirits of plants, or animal spirit medicine, and or fairies, you know, fairies sort of it's kind of a silly word for a pretty powerful energy, you know, fairy, we think of fairies as like little Tinkerbell, right? And I don't see them that way. I see them as they're kind of intense and they're, you know, think about the energy of the natural world. They can be powerful, but chaotic, but they're towards life, you know, they really have a deep connection with life and the planet. So some of you guys, ladies, people, your guides will be more picked from the natural world. You'll have the fairies, the devic element, elementals, all those kinds of power animals, because that's where you're sourcing your power from. And if you're a shaman, that's what you're going to have. So it's really good to know that. Yeah, so Cindy from Rhode Island, I'm talking to you, honey. You always get these power animals in your meditations, and you're sort of like a, you know, fairy. You're like a little fairy spirit here. So the other guides that are around you are, you know, the divas, from the diva, and I don't mean like rock star diva. I mean the divas are big, like, you know, elemental energies that have to do with the earth. So you want to look into that and study that a little bit more, because your guides are always going to be from that school. And Sue, who's also in this class, she's like that too, because she's a shaman, and shamans work with ancestor spirits and also plant and animal guides. So then there's also, what I just think of, there's a huge category of these guides that I don't really know how to I don't know how to identify them. I call them pure energy guides. When I was younger, I used to call them energy blobs, but I realized it doesn't sound that respectful. So pure energy guides is a little bit more of a respectful term for that. And the pure energy beings are, I don't know, they don't have a form. They're not human. They're not angels, there's some other category, and there's a huge, as far as I can tell, an infinite variety of these beings. So a lot of times when I do readings for people, I'll see these pure energy beings around them, and they're, like I said, they're a little bit hard to categorize. They're not, you sort of have to take them on a case-by-case basis, but they are something that, you know, is around quite a lot. So, all this being said, what does this mean for you? Just gonna move my computer around a little bit because the light is coming in too hard. There we go. What this means for you is that I want you to begin to really look at who your team is. You're going to do this through your journal. So as you do your meditations, as you do your daily meditation, I want you to write down and record who your guides are. You may have guides that you've already been working with for a long time. You know, that guide that's been around you since you were a kid, that guy you always see when you do healings. I want you to write them down, then write down the name, if you've got a name for that guide, and what you know about it. So you begin to record them in your journal. And we're looking for the core group that's around you. So if you're a person like James and you have 800 million guides around you, James, I want you to begin to thin the herd a little bit here and really concentrate on the ones that are not just the random ones that are passing through and think you're interesting, but the ones that are really dedicated to working with you, have been working with you for a long time. Like, who's your core group? And begin to flesh that out and get as much information about them as you can. The inner sanctuary meditation that I gave you guys in the first class is really good for this because it gives you an opportunity to get their name, get their function. So you want, when you're working with a guide, you want to get their name if they've got one, their function, like what do they do? Like I have this sort of set of questions that I always ask, and in my head I think of it as name, rank, and serial number, but it's really not. It's more like your name, what are you doing? Like what is your function? What is your purpose for being around me? How is it that you're communicating with me? And like why should I listen to you, right? So I want you to get in the habit of not just taking this for on face value too, that your guides, especially ones that you're going to work with in a consistent level, need to sort of prove themselves to you. Like, you wouldn't just take advice from some person that was walking down the street and said, I have some advice for you. You need to have a relationship with this guide. You need to build a relationship with this guide, and they need to prove to you that they're legit. And that is especially true if you come up with new guides. New guides need a legitimate guide that's really there to help you and to work with you long term. Will have no trouble doing something to prove that it's for real. And I recommend that you ask for something in particular, like leave me feathers, or if it's you, then I want a message, and the message can be anything from pennies. I was having a hissy fit about something. This was a couple of years ago. But I really wanted some help from my guides, and I don't know, I was having a thing. And I was like, if it's for real, then give me a parking space. I was driving to Harvard Square, and it seems like a petty thing, you know, but I got a parking space exactly where I wanted to be, and I got two parking spaces in a row, so I didn't even have to really parallel park. I just, like, pulled right in. And when I opened the door, there were, like, a whole bunch of pennies, like 10 pennies in a row, lined up straight in a row, right when I opened my door, there they were. This is what I want you. I want you to get something like that. It can be anything. One of my other students said she wanted to see a giraffe because a giraffe, she lives in Weston. A giraffe is pretty unlikely in Weston. And she's like, show me, if you're on the up and up, show me a giraffe. She said an hour later, her son came home from school and he brought one of his friends, which she didn't know. He was going to come off the bus with one of his little friends. But he came off the bus and his little friend had a shirt with a giraffe on it. So she was like, okay, I get the point, you know. So I want you to decide what your thing is going to be and then have your guides, you know, confirm that they're really on the up and up. So that's the assignment. Begin to write down in your journal everything that you know about your guides. And in particular, and we're going to do a meditation right now about finding your spiritual director. You have already your protector guide. You have maybe some other guides, because maybe you got the guide that you did in the first class that we had. So this is a bit how you begin to assemble your team. And as your meditations go on, you may learn more and more about these guides, what their specialties is, how they're going to work with you, what if you don't get their names in their first in the first time around, you may get that. So James is asking, is that about proving that they're real or proving that they're useful to you? It's both. And the other way you can do the confirmation is with your pendulum, right? So I taught you how to use the pendulum, hold the pendulum and I've had people verify their guides with their pendulum, with the yes or no, are you really Fred the angel? Yes or no? And your name is Fred? Yes. Are you an angel? Yes. You know, is your function for me this? Yes. Okay. So, it's about all of that and really, kind of empowering you, to understand that you're in charge and that people get into trouble, when they work with guides and they take it a little bit on face value, that if you've ever seen a horror movie or if you've ever seen a ghost story or anything like that, you know that, sometimes the bad spirits, entities lie. They lie. And they're, you know, the certain particular kinds of lower astral entities, they're mischievous and annoying. They're not really dangerous. They're called lower astral entities, and they often come to newbie, I don't think they would bother any of you guys, but really newbie channelers who are using things like Ouija boards and stuff like that, and they appear to be something they're not. They appear in the light, and they look like Jesus, and they're like, "Mom, Jesus, la." And then you work with them, and they get sort of ugly, and they tell you to do weird things, and, you know, 3 weeks later, they're like, "I'm Jesus," and then they don't look like Jesus, and they're like, "And now it's time to kill your family." Like, you know, they're not really, like, those particular guides are not truly harmful, but they are mischievous and kind of annoying. So it's important to kind of, you know, really stand up for yourself and put any guide you have through its paces a little bit to prove that's on the up and up. And any guide you're working with that is on the up and up won't mind doing that. They respect our free will and our personal sovereignty, and they know they need to do that. So that's what I want you to do. Any questions about this before we go on to the meditation? We're going to do a brief meditation about helping you, well, our regular meditation about helping you find your protector guide. I mean, your spiritual director. Alrighty, so I want you to sit down if you're not already, both feet on the ground, back upright, arms and legs uncrossed, unless you're sitting Indian style, if that's comfortable for you. And close your eyes, take a nice deep breath. And you're going to start just by touching into your body and, again, noticing, are you in or out? Where are you in your body? Without judgment, it's not to judge. It's just to notice and observe. And with your breath, begin to bring yourself, draw yourself into your body. Feel the big bones in your body. Feel your legs and feet on the ground. Take a nice in-breath. So breathing yourself in into your heart and your chest. One more breath to breathe down your spine into your hips and your pelvis. And then another breath down into your legs and your feet. And then take a nice deep breath in, really big one. And exhale, drop the grounding cord down through your chair, through the layers of the building, ground, 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 ground. This time I'm going to have you ground from the bottom up just to switch things around a little bit. So in your next inhale breath, you're going to breathe energy up the grounding cord. The energy you're using is the light of the earth. That's the light that's at the center of the earth, the energy that's down there. You're going to breathe it up, 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 and up, filling your whole body, your whole energy filled with light, and exhale out the top of your head like you're a, you know, whale blowing out. Clear yourself that way. Some people ground better from the top down. Some people ground better from the bottom up. Either way is fine. So whatever works for you. This time we're doing it from the feet up. So again, nice deep energy like you're sucking through a straw. Breathe energy up the grounding cord. Fill your whole body with light. And exhale up out of your head and blow anything out the top of your head that you're ready to let go of. And one more breath like that. Breathing in light into your whole body and exhaling out the top of your head. And now just check in with the outer edge of your energy field. Find it. It should be about arm's length out. Make it nice and strong and solid. And having an outer edge, strong outer edge to your energy field makes sure that you're not going to allow anything yucky inside your being. So only things of love and light can get in. Supportive energy can come through, non-supportive energy stays on the other side. And from this place of being grounded, cleared, filled, and protected, I want you to journey to your inner sanctuary again. That place in spirit, in your imagination, where you feel really safe and secure. Could be the same place you were last time, it could be a different place. And again, just taking a minute to open and extend and practice with your psychic senses. So here you are in your inner sanctuary. What does it look like today? Look down at your feet. What are you wearing on your feet? What are you wearing on your body? What's the ground look like? Look around you. Look up at the sky. Are you inside or outside? Is it night or day? Where are you? And you can open up your other psychic senses. So now what do you hear? What noises do you hear? What is around you? What do you feel in your body? What do you just know? You don't have a seeing or hearing experience. You may just have a knowing experience. And into that space, you're going to call, invite, because we really need to invite. You're going to invite your spiritual director, the guy who's in charge of your overall spiritual growth. And again, just check, use your psychic senses to explore this being. What does it look like? There might be more than one, but there's generally just one. What do you feel or sense or know or perceive? How are you experiencing this particular guide? And ask them if they have a name they're willing to share. First thing that pops into your mind, even if it's weird, is the right answer. And ask them, what is their purpose in working with you? What's their function? How do they best communicate with you? How do they get messages to you? Might not be what you think. And now take a minute to just ask them anything, any question, anything that's going on in your life. Anything you might need help with? Any direction, advice you need? And now that you know this guide, this guide's going to give you a gift to take with you. A symbol, an image, word, a feeling, an object. This guide has something to give you today. So receive that, even if you don't know what it is. And then you want to thank your guide, say goodbye, get some love, and begin to come back into your body, knowing you can contact this guide anytime. Take a nice deep breath, really fill up your lungs, exhale down the grounding cord, come back into your body, wiggle your fingers and toes. Move around a little bit, and when you feel ready, you can open your eyes. So, how was that? I'm gonna stay on the line. For you guys, if you want to talk a little bit, if anybody wants to share or write what happened for them, or if you have any questions. Next class, we're going to talk about the three worlds, the upper world, the lower world, and the middle world, to give you guys really a map of these dimensions that we're going to learn how to travel through. It's pretty exciting. It's kind of cool. It's a good, very functional way to look at things. So we're going to do that next class. And in the meantime, your homework will be to continue to write in your, continue your daily practice and write in your journal now to assemble your team. So thanks for a great class, and I'm going to stay here on the line for a while. If you guys want to chat a little bit, I'm here.